हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहाद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
okay. Page 33, Sutra 229. Anyata numitau cha gya shakti viyogat. Anyata, otherwise, anumitau, in the case of inference, cha, and, gya, intelligent, shakti, power, viyogat, because of being destitute of. Arguing that gunas are remarkable has no foundation, since the gunas are without consciousness. Because we see previously is what they had said that, you know, the gunas are doing it, right? Because material nature is unconscious, the jiva doesn't do anything, or purusha, like that. So the modes do it, but what's the basis of it? Now they're just saying, but they're remarkable. You know, like saying, the amazing Spider-Man, of course, he can do anything. Right? That's all you have to do is just add that. Now, so he's just saying that that's not an argument. Like that. And this dot.
It's a footnote.
And where is the footnote? Oh, okay. Sutra Pragashika.
Maharaj, in the translation word by word, it is Gya means intelligence.
Yes.
Is it a relation with Jnana?
Yes, yes, because Jnana, knowledge, would be based on intelligence.
Ah, okay.
Okay. So everything goes down to these root words, generally like one syllable and all that.
Yes.
There's basically 2,000 root words, and from that all the words are produced. Of those 2,000, we generally use about 1,200.
Okay.
Like that. And then they expand out. So if you, I'm not sure how it is in French. In English, when you go back to Old English, in like 1,000 years ago, then it also had just that a few words, and
yes.
Then from there you expand.
Yes. Mm.
But now then you have to have a dictionary of, you know, a few million words to be able to work, because no one knows the grammar, no one knows how to develop the words. Like that.
That's why they have the etymology dictionary, where you can go back and
see. Yes, you can go back and see. Yeah, because many times when you go back to the original, then you see, you know, it's like we say knowledge, then it goes back to intelligence.
Yes.
Then you know knowledge actually has to be based on intelligence, not what you feel like. Right, you know. So yeah.
Yes. It's very important to catch the real meaning.
Yes, yes, yes. But it also, Vyasadeva makes a point that it's not that you always take everything back to the root word and use that as the main thing. Because you'll get some scholars that they'll do that and they'll miss out on the poetic elements of
yes.
the word.
Yes.
Right? So those who lean too much on the poetics, then, you know, the actual meaning of the word isn't important. And for those who are too literary, then they also miss the point, because there's also usage. So you have to be able to balance that. You know, so you have to see what's the intent of who's written the thing.
Yes, yes.
And then with that, then you can appreciate and understand.
Okay.
So, yeah. Sutta Prakashika. The gunas, though equipped with powers, lack consciousness and hence are incapable of creation. Previous to this, the Sutrakar explained in Vedanta Sutra 143, Tad Adhinatvad Artavad. That pradhan is useful since it produces the effects, world, under the Lord's direction, namely the Lord's glance. It cannot do this individually since it is lifeless. In his forthcoming work, the Sutrakar describes in Vedanta Sutra 2331, Karta Shastrar Ta Vat Vat, that the jiva is the doer and not the unconscious Prakriti. Because they're the ones that are the doer, but in why is it transforming? Because they're the doer. But at the same time, is they're actually not the doer, because Shastra says that, so it's by the Lord's potency. So they get to take part as an instrument in the Lord's potency. But the point is it wouldn't be happening unless the jiva was interested. So that's why he said he's the doer. But actually, in reality, he doesn't do, because he doesn't have that potency. The Lord does. So that's where confusion comes in. Because the soul is both a doer and not doer. The Lord's, Purusha, whether it's the jiva or the Supreme Lord, is both doer and non-doer. And at the same time, as material energy is also not a doer, but a doer. So that's the thing, is all this, to get that balance of how these three are working together. That's then what Vedanta can explain and these other philosophies can't. Because in that, then the important point is I am, the soul, I'm servant of the Lord. And in being a servant, I'm trying to please the Lord. Right? And that's being done through devotion. So that, the difficulty is that will only come up in Vaishnava philosophy. Other philosophies, they won't get this, because they're trying to hold on to, I'm the controller and enjoyer. So in other words, Vaishnava Vedanta is, I'm the servant of Krishna and he's the enjoyer. So everything's being done for his service. All other philosophies, Vedic or otherwise, are all trying to maintain I'm the controller and enjoyer. Some of them are positive, some of them are negative, some have a mix. Some work with one God, some work with more than one, some work with this whole plethora of gods, some don't even worry about gods, it's just the energy itself, nature itself. Then you have the atoms, you have, all these different things. So that all they're trying to do is, in some way or another, according to the modes that they're in and their particular taste in controlling and enjoying, they're trying to make a philosophy to support it. Some will use the Vedas, some won't. Like that. So that's what we're dealing with here. So if we ever want, this is stupid, that's because all of them at some point become stupid, because they're trying to support I'm the controller and enjoyer, which is not correct. But some will use great intelligence to apply it. Right? They go to great intellectual endeavor to establish their stupidness. And make it look like it's not. Right? That's the whole thing. It's just like, let's say you're in this very socialite group and you do something wrong, then you may try to make it look like it's not wrong. So that's what they're doing. And there's enough etiquette that, each one accepts the other one that they can do that. It's just because otherwise if they're wrong, you're wrong. So making up your own, making up a philosophy to prove that you're a controller and enjoyer, then that's okay. So then they all sit around with their crocodile grins, patting each other, how intelligent they are. But at the same time, each one thinks my way of showing I'm the supreme controller and enjoyer is better than your way, or all other ways. So you have this interesting, fruit salad of, all kinds of interesting things.
Maharaj, then these who base their ideas about being the controller and enjoyer based on the Vedas, they are at a level lower than those who are ignorant.
One sense, yes, in another sense, no. Because those who are ignorant, they have no idea, so they're really ignorant. These guys have some idea, so some of what they're saying is true. Their conclusions are wrong. So you many times see the mechanistic elements of their philosophy are correct up to the point where they're trying to get to. They're taking their goals based on the Veda. They're using the mechanistic elements given in the Veda. And so up to the point that they're interested, generally it works okay. But there'll be gaps here and there. But especially it's at the conclusion that that's where it all falls apart. So that's where it becomes foolish. You'll see up to that point, they're using their intelligence very nicely. But so So now, what is the advantage of this? Because we will look at, the other ones are more honest. But actually, honest means you actually know what you're doing and do the right thing.
Yes.
So those who don't follow the Vedas, they don't know what they're doing and aren't doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So now we can look at sincerity. If they want to actually know the absolute truth, then that they could be either within the Vedic or non-Vedic systems. Is that they actually want to know. So if they want to know, Krishna will put them in contact with the proper authorities. And then it's a matter of, do they take it? How quickly do they take it? How much do they take it? How far do they take it? Right? It means you always, once you start, you will finish. But it's just a matter of how quickly you want to. You know, it's like the kid eating his meal. Anyone else would eat that much food in, you know, like 3 minutes, but they'll stretch it over for half an hour, right, you know, like that. And a large surface area of their body, you know, and anything surrounding, including anyone trying to help them in the process. You know, so it's just unnecessary things are done. So you can stretch things out. That's what we're meaning. And so, or you can go through it very quickly. But the point is the advantage of having started from the Vedic is that the culture, the Shastra, the whole practice is what you're doing anyway. You know, at least in principle, you accept Guru, that surrender to Guru, the Shastra, Sadhana, and the sadhana generally takes the form of getting up early in the morning, Brahma Muhurta, taking bath, all those kinds of things, being clean, all these things. So in other words, the mode of goodness is the common point.
Okay.
So then from there, from the mode of goodness, then to step into a process that teaches you pure goodness will be very easy. So the religious aspect of it, you'll have basically zero or very minimal difficulty with.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. But the philosophy, now that will be sometimes harder. The concept of philosophy and analytics and all that will be easy. But the conclusions, that may be more difficult. So then you may see that they get more distracted and all that. Because their life's already in goodness, they don't see the need to get involved in anything higher. For those who aren't following the Vedic version, generally the results of their endeavors, you know, being vikarma, don't give good results. And so they're suffering greatly. So they're looking for an alternative. So when the alternative comes along, the philosophy, since they know nothing, for them it's easier because they will take that philosophy and no problem.
Yes.
So you'll generally see those from the non-Vedic background, they don't have any problem accepting the conclusions of the Vaishnava Vedanta. Like that. That's very easy. While those who have followed a Vedic, you know, non-Vaishnav philosophy, they may have some difficulties. You have to take time to clear all those. But those who grow up in the non-Vaishnav background, they have no concept of sadhana, acceptance of authority, the teacher, you know, getting up in the Brahma Muhurta and all this and that. So they just don't have that kind of background. They don't know how to use their intelligence and mind in actual logic. They only know how to speculate. You know, so there'll be some weaknesses there. But the main weakness will be on the religious side. So the philosophy they'll take very easily. The religion will be their difficulty. So that means the practice of it will be hard. Though the goal is for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? And so let's say the dog is eating prasad, so that's spiritual. But the dog also barks and makes noise, which is not. But being a dog, they can't tell the difference. You understand? So those who don't follow the Vedic, they can't actually tell what religion is because they've never actually dealt with one. You know what I'm saying? If they come from any kind of strong religious background, generally they'll have less problem. But they will have a problem on moralism. Because for them, religion means, you know, the secondary pranamoy morality. That is religion for them, what is actually sub-religion. So actual religion that's based on what you're supposed to do and this and that, you know, and that's the basis of right and wrong rather than what I feel like. That will be very difficult. That will be a stumbling block for them. So philosophy is strong like that. And but the religious part will have weaknesses. Well, you see the smartas in them. They, for them, the religion will be easy. In fact, it is probably easier than what they're practicing. You know? And, but at the same time as the philosophy, the conclusions will be a problem. So you see each one has its, you know. How you say, six and one half dozen the other. Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that. And each one thinks the other one is not nicely situated.
Yeah. So Maharaj, if as a sparring devotee, if we don't accept 100% the Vaishnava Siddhanta, so means we have the tendency to think that we are controller and enjoyer.
Yes. That's what mixed devotional service is we accept the ultimate point.
Yes.
But the detail, that's, you know, the metaphysical and the other aspects of the practice that allude to the point that we're not the controller and the enjoyer, sometimes those conclusions escape us. You know,
we got to digest.
Yes, and digestion's a little slow, like, you know, still working on digesting all those previous sinful activities. So, you know, there's a cue, right? You know, you got to put it in line. You know, so.
This is the problem with mixed devotional.
That's the problem with mixed. But is that, as we said, unless it's pure Vaishnavism, it will be mixed.
Yes.
But the point is, what it's mixed with. So the one, it'll have more problem in the jnana. The other one will have more problem in the karma. You know. Does that make sense? So the one that the jnana yoga is, you know, that aspect, the karma will be very difficult. So you see. Okay. Okay, Sri Govindabhasha. See that space there? That's so you can meditate. That. Realize the great unlimited. No, I just said it.
Contemplate and deliberate.
Yes, contemplate and deliberate. And then find out, oh, it's on the next page. Okay, so that isn't the Bhasya. Okay. So not the, you know, all the Maya bodies become excited, and then you find out. And on the next page, then. Okay.
Okay. Siddhanta.
Yeah, okay. Siddhanta. Even if you infer that the gunas have remarkable powers, Anyatanu mitau. This does not take away the faults. Why? Because the gunas are incapable of considering. Yatritva viyogata. I will create the world. Right? Yes. They aren't going to think that. Pradhan, devoid of consciousness, cannot create. Bricks cannot create a house without a conscious controller. Right? Because the modes are the tools. So we can say as, well, you know, how is this house? Oh, it just built itself. How? You know, the bricks, they just built it. You know, by, how you say, you see that guy over there, you know, sitting there smoking his cigarette? Just by that, proximity. Then the bricks took on the superimposition of consciousness and desire, and therefore built the house. Like that. And you see by proximity to the bricks, he's taken on the superimposition of being, a non-conscious entity. Mm-hmm. It's just sitting there.
This is remarkable.
Yeah, which is remarkable, right? You know, so all these, you know, heads of company should see the, amazing, philosophical effect on their labors rather than getting on their case why they're so lazy. No, but they're in this huge warehouse of unconscious things and they're starting to take on that quality. They should see the philosophical point here. Like that, you know, they're just too overwhelmed by their greed for profit that they're not able to contemplate and appreciate. Like that. Yes. So, then you could say, the bricks can't do it, they're unconscious. Yes, but the tools are remarkable. You know, the brick laying tools. But no, they can't function either. So there has to be a conscious controller. That's the thing. So even you take it, it doesn't matter.
And the modern scientists, they don't even bother with proximity. They just say that Asia's consciousness just appeared somehow.
Appeared.
Without consciousness, without spirit.
Just under a rock somewhere.
These guys, at least, they accept that they're Ishvara and Prakriti.
Yeah.
And,
that's why they're better, because they understand the principle of soul and like this, but they can't tell the difference here between, means at least Shankya can't tell the difference between the Jiva as Purusha and the Supreme as like that. And these guys, it doesn't matter. They're the Supreme, so I said so. That's good, you know, because that's what you do. You quote, well, you know, whatever it is, you know, Smith said this in his paper, you know, this and that, and I quote here. You know, it just happened like that. And also then over here, James, you know, in his paper over here said, you know, here, and then I quote in paragraph this, page 7, that we found it under a rock, you know, like this. And so therefore then consciousness exists. So now, so all they have to do is present something enough just so you'll accept it. Then they'll base everything on that premise that actually hasn't been proven. That's the whole thing. I think they call them theorems. You know, it means you can't prove it's wrong.
Yes.
But it hasn't been proven right.
Yes.
So they yes. take it that that's the way, there is no absolute truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's just, you know, which is fine. We don't mind, the laws of nature are there, but you can't prove there's no God. So therefore then, by their theory, then God has to be part of the equation.
Yes.
You know.
One option.
Yeah, an option. At least 50% option. Because it either is or isn't, so it's 50-50. Right? And if you look at, you know, intelligence and cooperation and harmoniousness, you know, intelligence, or you look at by chance and everything is, there's non-harmonious and all that, but we see it's harmonious, so it kind of leans on the side of intelligence. Yeah. Means if you're intelligent enough to appreciate it, right? Not overwhelmed.
But if you want to be too much controller, you cannot accept.
Yes, you cannot accept like that. If you're too overwhelmed by your own subjective need to be the controller, then you can't be objective enough to understand that it's a possibility.
Okay.
Oh, okay. He just turned his eyes. I just see these. You know, like this. Oh, okay. I should stay with God. Bhagavatam verse reference 11:10:32. As long as the living entity thinks that the modes of material nature have separate existences, he will be obliged to take birth in many different forms and will experience varieties of material existence. Therefore, the living entity remains completely dependent on fruitive activities under the modes of nature. So as long as you think the modes aren't functioning because of their connection to Krishna, then you'll remain under the potency of the modes, or the control of the modes. As soon as you understand it's Krishna who's controlling, that's when you become freed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you become completely freed from the modes.
Mm-hmm.
When you're completely dependent on Krishna, then you're completely freed from the modes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think that the modes themselves are independent, then you'll be completely dependent upon them.
Yes.
Okay. It's simple. Sutra 2210. Viprati Shedhach Cha Saman Jasam. Vipra Ti Shedhat. Because of contradiction, Cha and Asaman Jasam. Untenable. Because Kapila's philosophy is inconsistent, it is unfit. Sutra Prakashita. The Sutrakar quotes the opponent's Smriti Shastras, which disagree with each other, and thus proves the fallacy of their philosophy. Sri Govinda Bhasya. Because of thorough contradictions, Kapila's philosophy is inconsistent, asamanjasam, and thus to be disregarded by those desiring the highest good. Because he says that Prakriti acts for others' benefit and is visible, the Jiva is the enjoyer, seer, and controller Prakriti. Shariradi vyati rita puman. The Jiva is separate from the body and other things. Then, samhata parartavat. Pradhan is a combination which exists for others. But he also says that the jiva is without change, without qualities, devoid of knowing, acting, and enjoying, a being in isolation. Jara prakashayogat prakashaha. The jiva is conscious and matter is not conscious. Nirgunatan na chid dharman. Because it has no qualities, the jiva has no quality of consciousness. Right, so he's saying the jiva is conscious, and he said, no, that's the point. If it doesn't make sense, that's Bhushan's point, is that these are quoting all from Shariak Sutras, 145 to 46. So he's saying these things, but they're contradictory. He says he's just consciousness, but then saying he has no quality, so he has no quality of consciousness. And that material nature, jiva, is separate from the body and other things. Pradhan is then creating all these things for the enjoyment of the jiva. You know, okay. But then it says the jiva is you know, conscious, like that. And that, but then at the same time, is then he has no qualities, so he's not conscious, he's not the enjoyer. So then how does he get these things? Oh, by hanging out with Pradhan. Right? You know, it's just the jiva has nothing to do, because he has no qualities, so he has no quality of consciousness. So he hangs out with Pradhan, and then from that association, then he takes on this, you know, these qualities. But at the same time, how does he become conscious even? You know, another place he says because he's conscious. But then if he's conscious on this, nobody has no quality, so he's no conscious. So any point in their philosophy where they run into a problem explaining it, then they'll have another way of backing it up. So that's why it's contradictory. Right? So the point is they want to be that they are the controller and enjoyer. But then the various things from the philosophy show that they're not, so then they'll have things to, you know, get around that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right? Yesterday when he wrote Vedanta Sutra, he's speaking himself, because Kapila philosophy is inconsistent, it is unfit.
Because it's going here, because of contradiction is untenable. Because when you have sutras, there's different kinds of sutras. So in this case, you know, they apply here. You have a sutra that makes the point. Yes. And then you have these other sutras that are connected to that.
Yes.
Just like they say, mm-hmm. Krishna is the supreme. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so that's the main sutra. Then you have these other sutras after that, and the controller, and the creator, and the things like this. Yes. But we just say, and the creator. What's it connected with? It's connected with that original. So you'd have to see this in connection with the sutras that it's explaining, yes. Like that.
Because here, when he spoke about Kapila, he spoke about the atheistic Kapila.
Yes, yes.
And the atheistic Kapila has been born after he wrote the Vedanta Sutra, no?
These philosophies are always there, and the guy's name is always Kapila. You know, yeah. Just like if there's, I don't know about maybe, do you have a cliche, like a taxi driver? He has a particular name, right? It's always the same. Or the guy who runs the little bistro,
yes.
It's always the same name.
Yes, yes.
Like that. Yes. So the guy who, Bhakta
Jose.
Yeah, Bhakta Jose. Yes. So the guy who writes this philosophy is always named Kapila. Because even if you're not talking here, you can talk from the previous Kali Yuga.
Yes.
Like that. Because many times in here, because there's no time, then they can be referring. Like many times the stories that we hear in the Bhagavatam, they're not from this cycle of the four Yugas.
Yes.
Some are and some aren't. Some aren't even the same Manvantara. Sometimes they're the same Manvantara, different, you know, this is the 28th, and one of the stories someone was saying is from the 24th. And then some of them you see they go back to the first day of Brahma, so they're actually, you know, what's going on there. And then you have those ones with the prayers of Hamsaguya, I think in the Chakshusha Manu, so one Manu before, you know, and then before that it was what was happening, then went back to the first day of Brahma, and then, you know, so it's just, the point is the absolute is eternal. The knowledge of him is eternal, the process is eternal, and you also have the modes of nature, and how they act is always according to certain laws. And so they will always be creating these philosophies. So there's always six philosophies. Right? So it'll always be there. These are the six, you could say, major deviations that you can have from Vaishnava philosophy. Mm-hmm. You know, one's more on karma, one's more on jnana, one's more on yoga. You know, it's one's more on logic, one's like this, and here's analysis.
Yes.
So you get these. So we see as Prabhupada, when he's discussing these, he'll go in and out of the atheistic philosophers or the materialistic philosophers into the materialistic scientists.
Yes.
And he'll also call them both scientists because they're working with analyzing the nature.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same thing. So that mentality has always been there. It's just that here we're dealing with the Vedic form because then you see the logic and everything like that. The same applies for the non-Vedic forms.
Mm-hmm.
The same arguments can be used. You just have to find what language or examples that they would be able to relate to. But the principle is the same. You know, how does life come from matter?
Yes.
So they don't even know about Pradhan, they just know what they see here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so they don't even understand the metaphysical principle of Mahat or that. They can see some patterns. And that's why, you know, so those who are looking at more the metaphysical, then they consider themselves higher than those who don't.
Yes.
But at the same time, until they can observe it with their senses, pratyaksha, they don't accept it as true. It's a theory until that. But then when they can see it, then they'll say, okay, now it's been proved. Even though it's still, you know, a theorem. That's the thing. That's the fun part. But the same principles apply.
The particular point that you mentioned about, you know, the sutras having connection to the previous sutras. Even in Vedanta Sutra, we find this, wherein it has been said that this particular, the no, is being taken for the particular sutra 2222, you know, which we already did it
mm-hmm.
earlier. You know.
Yes.
That has been carried forward three or four sutras. You know.
Yes.
That connection is being maintained. You know. That's how the acharyas give us the explanation.
Yes. Yes. So, yeah, you'll always see like that. You know, it's like Sanatana Goswami in his purport. He'll say, you know, it means this. Or, it means like this. Or, like this. So it's all based on the previous point that's been made. It's just giving different angles.
Yes.
Okay. You know, so some may be ors, some may be ands.
Yes.
You know, some may be buts. You know, so you get all those different things.
Vedanta Sutra is not.
Huh?
Vedanta Sutra is not. No, not.
Not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not, not that.
Not that. Yeah.
In refuting them.
Yes. Okay. Okay. In one place, Kapila says that the jiva is in bondage because of non-discrimination of the gunas and becomes liberated by discriminating the gunas. However, in another place, he says that bondage and liberation belong to the gunas, not to the jiva. Naikan tato banta mokshao. Because if he's the jiva is who he is, then he can't be actually technically bound. Because they're already liberated. How can you bind something that doesn't have any qualities or is unaffected? Right? Does that make sense? But the point is they're misapplying it because they want to keep the control and enjoyer aspect.
Your Maharaj, when it says, you know, that the jiva is in bondage or in liberation or something like that, so then it's so contradictory that even a child can use his common sense, not even intelligence, to understand that, you know, there's so much of flaw in the philosophy.
Yes, yes.
So how come their followers, the Samkhya followers or their disciples, you know, they stick to this particular process? Because it's very natural that one should reject it.
Yes, but let's look at it practically, you know, using ourselves as an example.
Yes.
Okay? Now, this is the third year we're discussing Vedanta Sutra. Now it's starting to make sense. You understand?
Yeah.
So, the more you're trained in all this intellectual stuff that's wrong, then the harder it is to get you back to the intellectual what's correct. Does that make sense? So the modern academy being based on speculation, which is the same kind of school as these schools, then it takes us so long to figure out what it is. But once you do, then you see it's so obvious. So like that, once you come to that point, now if you teach this to the child, then they won't have this problem.
Yeah.
They'll learn actual logic, actual understanding, all that. So that's the fun part is we're going through this and taking so long and all that, but actually it will be much easier to teach it to the kids because they don't have a a background of speculation, let alone having a degree and some prestige in being a good speculator, you know. So like that. Therefore, it takes time. So it is that obvious, but you see, is that only by the grace of the acharyas and their constant repetition of the same thing, then finally now we're catching it. Otherwise, for the last 2 years, we've been saying, but it's the same thing. Why are they saying it again? Because we haven't learned, and only this year they're going, oh. Yeah. And then you start to see the variety of their stupidity. You know. But it all comes down to material energy, the jiva, and the Supreme Lord. Those three. We've been saying that for, you know, that is chit achit ishwar. All the Vaishnavas say that. So there's some misunderstanding in these three. Well, do it that way, sometimes that way, sometimes. Someone brought up the other day, though, someone from a Indian background that had attended a Madhva Gurukul. Is that, you see, Madhva, when he's making his point of two, he's making it like that. So then, that style, that's actually our line.
Yes.
So.
That's how we will learn.
Yeah. Yeah, because this is generally the American do that.
Really?
Yeah, and I think in Europe, generally they do more like these. They start here, one, two, three. You also have to have fingers that you can do that. I can only do it on this hand, but this hand I can't do it over here. But
That's for the kids. It's very difficult. For them it's easier.
Yeah, because then they have to learn. You have to...
Yeah,
it's two places at once. And there's some places where they count for this way. You start from there. But is that everywhere, on the eastern side, or just the Hungarians? Okay. And someone's like that. So maybe if we went over to Mongolia, then they would be doing it this way. Then we'd find the origin of that. Because I'm wondering, where is this one from? It's the same thing, because you can put your fingers here and hold it down, you know, or you start here and go out this way. So it's either way you can go. But the open hand one, then it's harder. You have to have more, I guess, pious credits to be able to do that. Okay. Okay, he says that bondage and liberation belong to the gunas, not to the jiva, right? Because then the problem is the jiva having no qualities, how can they be conscious, so how can they be bound or liberated, right? Just, you know, yeah. Nai kantato bandha mokshao purushasya vivekat vite prakriter anjasyat sasangatvat pashu vat. Bondage and liberation do not belong to the jiva, and only arise because the jiva lacks discrimination. They belong to Prakriti by association, like an animal in association with a rope. Right? So the animal itself is technically not the one cause of bondage. It's because they're tied by the rope, they're bound. Mm-hmm. But then what does this bring up? What would be the importance of that? It means we're not the idiots for being here.
Yes.
We're just somehow or another bound by the modes of nature, like the animal's bound by the rope. It wasn't the animal's plan to be bound by the rope.
No.
It's just somehow or another it is, so it's by that association. So then, but that still doesn't explain why would it happen. Why would unconscious matter then, using the modes of nature, create and bind another form, you know, the jiva? You know, so at this point, when you get down, he's gone in far, like before you see we're back a little bit, but now he's gone into it enough you can see is nothing holds together in the philosophy. It completely falls apart here. Because now, at some point, if you say, what the jiva, but how could, if the jiva is free, why would he be in this? You know, he's saying like the rope, but he's unconscious, so why would he even be affected? You know what I'm saying?
No.
The animal's asleep, and you come along and tie them up. What do they care? You know, it has no effect. So being bound means then you have that effect of being, not in a liberated state of consciousness. But since they're not conscious, then how could it happen? And Pradhan's not conscious. But if we say Pradhan becomes conscious by associating with Jiva, how can Pradhan become conscious by associating with Jiva if the Jiva technically isn't conscious? You know, so then they'll have to say Jiva's conscious. So if they're conscious, then it's this. No, but they can't have any. They have no quality, so it has to be the modes. The modes have qualities. You understand? So they just keep shifting their position depending upon which is advantageous for their argument. That's all. So it's not logical.
So the only answer now is by chance.
Yes, so basically what we see here is that, I guess in one sense you could say they're using that technique of chala. Mm-hmm. Is they're taking whatever is the definition given in the Vedas and shifting it. Mm-hmm. So it'll say this, meaning one aspect, but they'll give it a different meaning. Another one has another angle, they'll give that a different meaning. In this way they keep shifting the positions.
Yes.
So that's considered, you know, one of the improper...
Yes.
Stands. It's not. You could say it's not your pure logic. Mm. You know, you're using tricks to win the argument.
Mm. Mm. Chala is common for all the six.
Yes. Everybody uses chala.
It's very common.
Yeah. You know, you just shift the meaning. We should do this. Yeah, but that guy is, you know, he did that. What does that got to do with this? But because that thing is bad, that means that person did that is bad, they're bad, so then doing this is bad, so therefore, you know, so it's just, how to say, superimposition. Yes, by the proximity of my statement, now they become polluted.
And it's very remarkable.
Yes, it is very remarkable. In this way, one can find many contradictions in their philosophy. So that's the thing, is what we have to appreciate, is the acharyas, they've already gone through all these philosophies. So we don't have to, because we might, you know, we wouldn't catch these subtleties. You know, because we're being conditioned, we're going to see them according to our own light. But while they see things always in connection with Krishna, so they understand, you know, all the meanings and everything.
Can we say that this is one particular point of the acharya, means they understand the thing as they are, without any mistake.
Yes.
Even small mistake.
Yes. Well, even a small, because Prabhupada said in a very long trajectory, that being off by a little bit, you'll end up in a different place.
Like a spiritual master may make some small mistake, but not an acharya.
Yes, that's why in especially in the Kali Yuga, then the system of the parampara is carried out by spiritual masters, then basing their direction on the acharya. Right, so it's not that as it goes down in the parampara, then it takes on a new flavor and all that. No, it's always that same flavor, the same presentation. Just according to your realization, that's what you give.
Yes.
So if you're contemplating it, trying to practice it, then you can help others contemplate it and practice.
Mm-hmm.
Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.7.5. The pure soul is pure consciousness and is never out of consciousness, either due to circumstances, time, situations, dreams, or other causes. How then does he become engaged in nescience? Right? So the point being is that he's always conscious no matter what, because they can say, oh, but in this situation, then they're not conscious, or in this situation, they are. But they're never. They're always conscious. Srimad Bhagavatam 291. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, unless one is influenced by the inner energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no meaning to the relationship of the pure soul in pure consciousness with the material body. That relationship is just like a dreamer's seeing his own body working. You're dreaming and you're doing things and walking around or flying or whatever it is that one does in dreams. It's just like that. There's no actual connection. So he's conscious and it's not connected with the body, right? Srimad Bhagavatam 11.11.1. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Uddhava, due to the influence of the material modes of nature, which are under my control, The living entity is sometimes designated as conditioned and sometimes as liberated. In fact, however, the soul is never bound up or liberated. And since I am the Supreme Lord of Maya, which is the cause of the modes of nature, I am also never to be considered liberated or in bondage. Right? So this will be the point that they're misunderstanding. Because the soul is always in a liberated state. Their consciousness becomes polluted and bound. But the soul actually can't be, because how can dead matter overpower something conscious? Because we identify with the matter, therefore we're controlled by the modes. Right? And so, because Krishna is always conscious, he's fully conscious, he can never be under the modes. The jiva can, simply because they allow themselves to be because of the polluted consciousness. Because Krishna is never in polluted consciousness, therefore he can never be under the modes. Right? So this element that they're liberated or not, this is the point then they're getting confused with. Because they can't understand how they're liberated and how they're not, because you have to accept the Lord. Right? So anything that you have to accept the Lord, that's where the problem comes in. I'm not the controller and enjoyer, the problem comes in. So the basic fundamentals, so we see when we start off with the philosophy, we're not the body, we're the soul, right? And we're not the controller and enjoyer, we're the servants of Krishna. This is the core fundament. If that's understood, then you can build on that for everything else. But if there's some mistake in that part of the philosophy, because we'll take, oh, that's very basic. No, that's the core. Everything else that we're discussing is proving that, that's all. Right? So those things of chitta, chitishwara, and then sadhya sadhana, this is the core of the whole philosophy. And then, because of the sophistication of the philosophy, it has unlimited explanations of each one of those five and the relationship between them. Does that make sense? So that's what's going on. So we have so many angles, and we can handle a certain amount. But it's not that there's not more. Like we said, Madhvacharya was giving, I think, his plan was to give 108 translations of the Vishnu Sahasranam. So you give 108 different meanings to each name. I think after 40, his disciples just said, that's it. We can't digest anymore. So he stopped at that point. Like that. And 108 just means he's, you know, doing some nice serving. Ananta is giving unlimited, so. So it's, yeah, there's a limit to how much we can absorb.
So Maharaj, when we have every new devotee is understanding that we are the spirit soul servant of Krishna. So from the beginning, at the core of the beginning.
Yes, that's the core. That's the thing. It's because we'll take, oh, that's basic. Now let's get into more sophisticated stuff. So then more sophisticated means, you know, management, self-help, economics, these kind of things like that. So because it has technical, it has all these different things. But the point is those are details. So it seems like you're moving up, but actually, since the Vedic is descending, when you adjust it, then you see that you're just going down into material nature. So unless you're keeping that connection, if you're keeping that connection, then you can go as far into detail as you are able. But if you're not keeping that connection, then you're just becoming, you know, distracted by Maya. So, and it's consciousness. So it's not a matter of, oh, I accomplishment. I did that, okay, now it's ongoing. Yes. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't stop.
Yes.
You know?
No holiday.
Yeah, no holiday. No holiday. But the point is in connection with Krishna, then there's no need of a holiday because that is the holiday. Yes. Right? You know? Yes. Maya is the work. Right? You know? Okay, footnote 10. The BBT purport explains that the jiva is never entangled in matter and is thus liberated. Although his illusory state may be accurately described as entangled, bada, and liberated, moksha. That's why we see in the Dasamul, they give the nature of the jiva first. Then they give the bound jiva, the bada jiva, and the mukya jiva. Okay. Right? Because they've already explained their position of being transcendental, but you have three different explanations. Not different, but three explanations at different angles. Because that's the position of the soul, and because that's the position, therefore, leaving that in consciousness, that position, then they become bound, and then giving that up, that in proper consciousness, they become liberated. They come back to their natural state. So that's why being liberated is the natural state of the living entity. On the other hand, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally situated in His own spiritual potencies, and hence the terms bada and moksha don't apply to Him. In this chapter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, explains the different characteristics of conditioned and liberated life. The symptoms by which one can recognize saintly persons in the various processes of devotional service to the Lord. In the previous chapter, Uddhava inquired from the Lord how conditioned and liberated life are possible. The Lord now replies that Uddhava's question is somewhat superficial. Since the pure spirit soul is never entangled in the material energy of the Lord, the living entity imagines a false connection with the three modes of nature and accepts the material body as the self. The living entity therefore suffers the consequences of his own imagination, just as one suffers the illusory activities of a dream. This does not indicate that the material world is illusory in the sense that it is non-existent. But it's illusory of what you think it is. It doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Like the dream is illusory, that you're flying in the sky and all this. The point is the dream exists, but that you're flying in the sky, that doesn't exist. So the material energy exists, but you're the supreme controller and enjoyer of it, that's an illusion. Mm-hmm. That's not happening.
Right. Sure.
Yeah?
Sure.
Well, it's like this. If Caesar and Napoleon couldn't do it, no one could do it, right? You know, they had the best shot. It didn't work. Yes. Or on this side, Hiranyakashipu, Ravana. I mean, just look at the, you know, Duryodhan. I mean, it's just, and they couldn't, so then it's not happening. The material world is certainly real, being the potency of the personality of Godhead, and the living entity being the superior potency of God is also real. But the living entity's dream of being part and parcel of the material world is an illusion that drags him into the contradictory state called material conditioned life. So it's the consciousness. The living entity is never actually baddha or bound up, since he merely imagines a false connection with the material world. Because there is ultimately no permanent connection between the living entity and matter, there is no actual liberation. So he doesn't become liberated because he's not actually part of it in the first place. Right? The living entity being eternally transcendental to the... That's why we don't make a big thing out of becoming liberated. You know? It's just, that's the normal state. You're Krishna conscious, that's the state you're in. You're not Krishna conscious, then you're not. So if someone becomes liberated because of their deliberation and practice of Krishna consciousness, then we shouldn't be, oh no, you're saying you're liberated. How, that's a very advanced position. That's what the materialists say. You have to be very careful. I can remember one devotee, he was having a discussion with his wife. She was, you know, in that, like that terminal, the first stage of terminal cancer or something like this. So it's just a matter of a very short time. I don't remember at which point it came. But he was talking to his wife and she was saying something like that. He says, well, how do you know that? You know, like that. Because it's here. You know, you go in here, this is there, this is over there, and this is that. Mother showed us doing this and that and all that. And he says, if you're saying that, it means you're liberated. He kind of looked at him and said, yeah. So, you know, it's like, what do you mean? It's like, you know, it's like saying, hey, it's daytime. It's kind of, you know, it's just kind of like, of course, what's the point? You know, because we're thinking at it, oh, wow, you know, like this. That is, that's the normal state of the living entity. Does that make sense? Yeah. So That's the whole thing. That's the normal way of seeing things. So we're in a, you could say, a diseased condition, and that we're not seeing according to our natural position. Mm-hmm. So when the disease goes away, we're back to normal. Like you wouldn't say that the child is now liberated when his cold goes away. Mm-hmm. No, that's normal. Mm-hmm. But when everybody's got a cold, you take it that having a cold is normal. If anyone doesn't have a cold, then wow, that's special. But not having a cold, that's normal. Does that make sense? So we'll say, oh, they've been liberated, when actually they haven't. That's why Krishna says it's actually superficial. There's no actual liberation. You just come back to your normal position. The living entity, being eternally transcendental to the inferior material energy of the Lord, is eternally liberated. Lord Krishna reveals that in one sense the living entity is factually not bound up and thus cannot be liberated. Right? Because you can't be liberated if you're... It's like if you are telling me, you know, untie me, but you're not tied up. Right? Does that make sense? In your mind, then you're having this whole thing and you're being tied up and the ninjas came in and this and that and, you know, like that, and they're being dragged off by the cowboys. And so how those two got together, I don't know, but that's what happens in dreams, like that, and... You know, so it's not real, but we'll say, oh no, we're bound up. But actually, you're not, because you can't be liberated because you're not bound in the first place. Right? So yeah. But in another sense, the terms bondage and liberation can be conveniently applied to indicate particular situation of the individual soul who is the marginal potency of the Lord. Right? So it can be conveniently applied. Because we're talking about the consciousness. But in factual position, it doesn't exist. But because of their consciousness, then, Prabhupada says, it can be conveniently applied. So that's where the problem comes in. We can explain both things. Well, you see, these other philosophies take one position, the other, and this, and so they can't actually get the whole thing. Because why would it be like this unless there is the position of being beyond that, which is the Lord? So some will accept Brahman. But the point is why would Brahman be doing what it's doing? Why would the jiva want to do things, though they're liberated? Unless the Supreme, as a person, has consciousness and has desire. Then it makes sense that the jiva, being part and parcel, would have the same kind of things. And then the arrangement of the creation for the living entity to act out this illusory concept until they come to their natural position. Right? Then it all makes sense. But as soon as you leave the Lord out of this equation, then you can't actually make sense of anything. Right? So just as anything being connected to Krishna becomes Krishna conscious in a form of liberation, anything not becomes the illusion. Right? So that means all these philosophies are very, very well thought out, intellectually designed illusion. Right? So that's the... and they're so proud of themselves, right?
Like virtual reality.
Yeah, like virtual reality. And you're the best in the virtual reality, and so then you're the greatest in the world, you know. The best, you know, how you say, you know, race car driver, the guy doesn't have a license and can't drive a car. But in virtual reality, man, he's the man, right? You know?
There are many followers.
Yeah, and so many followers, and they'll have conventions, and you know, all that. Yeah. It's amazing how illusion on the illusion on the illusion on, yeah.
Madam, because the jiva is a tatastha shakti, that is the reason why we can have these two terms been applied to the jiva shakti. Moksha and bhakti.
Because they're tatastha.
Yeah.
Meaning, they themselves are never liberated, or I mean, are never bound or liberated. So, what is it that's the tatastha aspect?
The consciousness.
Yes. So, in connection with that, that would be the point. Because otherwise, then, if you're saying it's because of tatastha, then you're saying that the tatastha itself can be liberated or bound. But it's not. It's the consciousness of. That's why material nature is never liberated or bound, because it's not conscious. Mm-hmm. Right? Maya is not in Maya for, you know, doing Maya stuff. Right? So, yeah. So, but in another sense, the terms bondage and liberation can be conveniently applied to indicate the particular situation of the individual soul, who is the marginal potency of the Lord. Although the individual soul is never actually bound to matter, he suffers a reaction of material nature because of false identification. And thus the term bada, or bound up, may be used to indicate the nature of a living entity's experience within the inferior energy of the Lord. Right, so once he becomes has a false identity, the experience he gets from being within the material energy, that's called bada.
Yes.
Right? Since bada describes a false situation, freedom from such a false situation may also be described as moksha or liberation. Right? So being bound is actually a false definition. So therefore you could also have being liberated.
Yes.
It's a false definition, but within that context, you have a false identity, then you remove that false identity. So then you could say, right? Since, therefore, the terms bondage and liberation are acceptable if one understands that such terms only refer to temporary situations created by illusion and do not refer to the ultimate nature of the living entity. Right, so even, so that's why the idea that, oh, you do this process, you'll become liberated by all these different schools. But it's still also a material point. Right? Because the thing is you're not bound. You know, so they want to allude to that, but they don't know how to connect it all together. When they were young, they didn't practice enough, you know, those little drawings that are all dots and then connecting all the dots. They didn't do that enough, right? In this verse, Lord Krishna states, Gunasya maya mulatvan name moksha na bandhanam. The terms liberation and bondage can never be applied to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, since He is the Absolute Truth and the Supreme Controller of everything. Lord Krishna is eternally the Supreme Transcendental Entity. He can never be bound by illusion. It is the duty of the illusory potency of the Personality of Godhead to attract the living entities to ignorance by creating a false impression of a blissful existence separate from Lord Krishna. The illusory conception of existence apart from the Personality of Godhead is called Maya, or material illusion, right? Because that's what it is. It's not the place, it's not that. It's the idea that you can enjoy separately from the Lord. Right? That's the illusory conception of existence apart from the Personality of Godhead. Right? So there is no existence separate because He is everything and everything's in Him. So it doesn't exist. But to have that concept that it is, that's illusion. That's why these other schools also have problem because they will think, they're not thinking of the relationship with the Lord. So because of that, there's illusion. Right? And then they have a clever philosophy to remove themselves from this illusion. Right? But they can, but because their philosophy is based on illusion, it won't give the results they're expecting. Since Lord Krishna is the supreme absolute controller of Maya, there is no possibility that Maya could have any influence over the Personality of Godhead. Mm-hmm. Thus, the term bandhanam or bondage cannot be applied to the eternal, blissful, and omniscient Personality of Godhead. The term, right, means He's in control. It's not that, means we're thinking, no, but what happens if He's not? He always is. We're in control of something, it goes the way we expect. If we lose control, it doesn't go the way we expect. Mm-hmm. So the point is, He never loses control because He's always conscious. Right? He is the controller. He is the source of the energy. He's like that. Right? You know, we have this thing of somebody creates something and becomes overwhelmed by it. Because we don't create. We only put ourselves in contact with something. And then the depth that we go into it, we become overwhelmed by it.
Yes.
But Krishna, He creates all this and he can never be overwhelmed because He's always creating more.
And His creation are working.
Hmm?
His creation are working.
Yeah, and it works.
That's it.
Yes. Yeah. It works. Yeah. Not like office. Yeah. But yeah. I was reading that. I think the vacuum cleaner guy Dyson, he did over 5,000 prototypes before he got one that actually worked that he could market. They can understand, you know, it's a good thing that Krishna's creation is not working like that. You know, Brahma created, no, not that one. No, not that, you know.
Yeah. Updating the versions.
Yeah, like that. You know. Yeah, keep going, updating, and so then finally gets to the point, and then people going, what are those funny animals? Oh, they're left from, you know, two versions before. Right? Like that. Don't worry, they'll go away. The term moksha or liberation indicating freedom from bandhana is equally irrelevant. So if he can't become bound, he can't become liberated. He's just, that's his natural state. So since we refer to the position as liberated from our conditioned state, we'll say the jiva is always in that position. But we'll think it's something to obtain. No, that's just the normal state. Right? And Krishna is always in that state. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has commented on this verse as follows. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is endowed with great spiritual potencies. Because of mundane concoction, the conditioned soul imagines that the absolute truth is devoid of variegated spiritual potencies by which he may enjoy blissful life. Although the living entity is the spiritual potency of the Lord, he is presently situated in the inferior illusory potency, and by engaging in mental speculation, he becomes bound in conditioned life. So we see his mental, the mental speculation binds us. Yes. So that's why then there's so much difficulty in the education. If it is based on the modern speculative methods, it will bind you. That's guaranteed. You know, it's like a, what is it? Sauron's ring, you know? It's going to bind you. You're not getting out of that one. So it's just, that's the point, it's the speculation, because we can say, no, but, you know, everybody's not a jnani, but everybody's speculating. Because if we get a house, we'll be happy. If we get a car, we'll be happy. Okay, one car, if we get two cars, we'll be happy. You know, and then the kids grow up, everybody has a car, we'll be happy. But then each one wants to use the other one's car, and then, you know, it's just, so it never ends. So that's the speculation, we become bound. And then the educational system then is based on this speculative. They may not show you how to speculate in sense gratification because their teachers have no idea how to do that. But they know because they, you know, they just, right? Professors are not known for sense gratification. But they know how to speculate. Then everybody else can take that and use that in their, you know, life and karma. So this speculation is the basis of it. So it has much more meaning, mental speculation, than just in jnana. Because the whole process of karma is mental speculation. Why is the follower Jaimini, he thinks if I do all these yajnas, I'll be happy eternally. Go to the head. That's speculation. You know? And then when the one doesn't work, then it'll do another. So that's it. We're always speculating. Every living entity speculates. Yeah? You know, maybe you'll find something, maybe you won't. It's just like, I don't know, it's interesting as you have the, when, I think in the 1800s, when the people from the East Coast, some gold was found on the West Coast in America, so many went out to the West Coast and saw that. And so when they would go and pan for the gold, they called it speculation. Because you're following the process, maybe you'll get something, maybe you won't. You know? So you just run the mind around in circles, maybe you'll get something, maybe you won't. Yes, it is. It's a long lineage of mental speculators.
If we asta to choose to come to the material world means starting a speculation.
Yes, what, you see, the key was before what it meant. The illusory conception of existence apart from the personality of Godhead is called Maya. Because right? We generally take it as just the, you know, improper, sinful, and all those things. That's what's Maya. No, it's the concept that there's anything separate from Krishna. So even if we're talking about good qualities, being behaved nicely and all that, being nice, being moral, being ethical, if we're not seeing it connected to Krishna, it's still illusion. Right? Brahma is creating the universe, doing all the things he's supposed to, doing or following all the rules. But it's still illusion, because if he sees it as an existence separate from Krishna. So that's why then Krishna is always telling the Vrajbasis that he is everything. Everything's in him. So there's no question of being separated. Mm-hmm. So then they're always able to, in everything, see Krishna.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Does that make sense? So there's never any illusion.
Mm-hmm. And so there is no speculation.
There's no speculation. Mm-hmm. Means it doesn't mean there's not deliberation on how to nicely do that. I could do, it means this in connection with Krishna like this, or I could do it like that. Yes. And Shastra mentions this, but we've also seen that, you know, Prabhupada did like this, and then, you know, we saw in the Bhagavatam, then one devotee in his service was doing like this. So we can you know, deliberate on all those different things.
Mm.
But it's all within its connection to Krishna and pleasing Krishna.
Mm.
You know, so we're seeing what laws of nature are there governing it, what nature do I have that, you know, what the governing of that. And you know, so therefore, what results can be performed, getting what results, and how is that pleasing to Krishna?
Mm.
I can contemplate all that, but it's all in connection with Krishna. As soon as we leave Krishna out of it, that same deliberation becomes mental speculation. So that's the difficulty, is that the process is the same. Just like if you're engaging the senses connected to Krishna, it's called bhakti. If you're engaging the senses not connected to Krishna, it's called sense gratification. Right? So the liberation in Krishna consciousness is just that. The liberation without Krishna consciousness, that's mental speculation. Right? So we see is all these, well, they're called paths of jnana because they're deliberating without Krishna. So it's intellectual, but it's without Krishna.
Yes.
You know, the karmis are making endeavor without Krishna.
Yes.
So karmis and jnanis means that their activities and their thoughts are not about Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see is the karmis do more work, less thinking, and the jnanis do more thinking, less work.
Yes.
But in any case, they're both not about Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
While the devotee, he does all that, then it's called devotional service. So in the beginning, I'm contemplating how this karma connects to Krishna. So I call it karma yoga.
Yes.
And it's mixed devotional service. But it can come to the point where it's pure devotional service, where all karma is seen in connection with Krishna.
Yes.
So in that way, karma yoga takes on a whole different... So many times Prabhupada is explaining karma yoga is just action in Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
It's not the mixed devotional service of karma yoga like we may mention. This is pure devotional service.
Mm.
Same with jnana yoga.
Mm.
Be like the four kumaras would be jnana yogis because they see everything connected to Krishna and that's the field that they contemplate.
Mm.
Does that make sense? But at the same time, it's not that it's jnana yoga like us.
Yes.
Is that... Yeah.
And can we say that this process of mental speculation for the jiva begins in the spiritual world itself?
It begins in the spiritual world, yes. But the point is we don't see it connected to Krishna.
Mm.
Right? So that's the start of material existence. You don't have to be in the material nature itself to take up material consciousness.
Mm.
Just as you don't have to be in the spiritual world to take up spiritual.
Mm.
Right, because if one goes one way, it goes the other. So, if we're thinking I can be in the material world and be in spiritual consciousness, why can't you be in the spiritual world and be in material consciousness?
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's how it starts. Right, and you'll end it by now you're in the material world, bring it to spiritual consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can go back to spiritual. So that's why it says back to home. It doesn't say, you know, transfer to that other place. It's mm-hmm. back to home.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So that's where we're from. Back to Godhead means now you're always conscious of Krishna. Because the spiritual world means you're always conscious of Krishna. Material means you're not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Liberation means that the living entity should transfer himself to the spiritual potency of the Lord, which can be divided into three categories. Ladini, the potency of bliss. Sandini, the potency of eternal existence. And Samvit, the potency of omniscience. That, okay. We'll stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi.